This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The farther we get into growing season, the more complex life becomes for Michigan's farmers. They're trying to plant, in some cases harvest, at a time when the world is moving in slow motion, if at all. Fred Leitz and his brothers run Leitz Farms. It's a fourth-generation operation, growing blueberries, cucumbers, tomatoes, and apples in Sotus Township near Benton Harbor. And he joins us today. Fred, welcome to Stateside.
Well, thank you for having me, April.
Farmers have so much to think about just during a regular year, but now COVID-19. How are you and everybody else on the farm doing? I imagine it's been challenging.
April, it's been very challenging. It's like drinking from a fire hose. Everything we're doing and new things we have to do, and therefore, whilst things were coming from the state, things were coming from the federal government, things are coming from OSHA, all having to do with the COVID-19 and dealing with employees and our own family personal safety. And being a farm, we all multitask. We're all jack of all trades. And in the wintertime, my HR person and myself, we try to get everything ready to go. And so that when April comes around, we can just start doing our thing and you know, getting the planting schedules, the planting and everything done. And then this happened, and it's just added to the burden.
Can you tell us a little bit about the size of the operation? And I know this is a product of several generations worth of Leitz's work, but how long have you been growing?
Oh, my gosh. I was raised here, and my brothers were too. We've been here our whole life, doing things on the farm. You know, we're our biggest crop is tomatoes, and we break that down by grape tomatoes, Roma tomatoes, and the round tomatoes like you buy in the store. Everything we do is fresh market. Everything is hand picked. You know, we're about 700 acres of intensive crops.
We know that there are labor shortages on farms already. But could you tell us what your workforce looks like right now?
Right now, we have about 46 H-2A visa workers from Mexico. They come in on the H-2A program. And we have, I think, 15 or 16 domestic migrants that came out of Florida. And then we have some seasonal workers that are our local people who just come and work for the season. And then we have our full-time employees. So we're about 80 people right now. And we'll ramp up by mid-July to 225, 230 people.
The 40 folks who are H-2A, was everyone able to get here on time?
Yes. We got, you know, being a contract, you work with recruiters in Mexico, you pay recruiters to find you the people, and everyone that's here this year has been here at least two previous years. So it was nice to have a workforce that was trained to know what we do. They had no problems. They've had their documents before. There's been no interviews at the embassy because of the COVID-19. But if you've been here previously and you've got a good visa and you've been in the H-2A or H-2B program, they allow you to get your visa renewed and come right in.
How are you keeping workers safe right now?
Well, we're doing all we can. I mean, out in the field, everybody wears a mask. It's pretty easy to social distance and self-distance out in the field. We haven't had anything close in the packing sheds or anything. None of that's going on for at least a month. At that point, then we'll make sure we'll be providing face masks a couple times a day and trying to distance the best we can. Going into town, you know, we're sanitizing people's hands before they get on the bus to go to the field. And when they get on the bus to come back from the field, we're sanitizing. The bus driver, after they get off the bus, sanitizes all the places, you know, where they could touch on the way in or out. And we're doing the best we can.
Yeah. Can I ask, I mean, in terms of where you are in the season right now, when you get to the end of the day and you have a minute to think about everything, what are your concerns about going into June and July about what's going to happen at the height of the season?
Well, I'm concerning myself more with marketing than with the COVID-19. I mean, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to have supplies on hand. We're going to do the training for the employees to keep them safe. us safe, our product safe, all that stuff. I'm more worried about markets and market conditions during that time, because we do a lot of wholesale to institutional type people that go to the restaurants and the casinos and schools and stuff like that. So that's my biggest concern right now, is being able to sell the product.
Right. The USDA announced recently that there could be more aid for farmers in store. But before that, there were the PPP loans for small businesses. Did you make an attempt to apply for any of those?
Yeah, I applied. I applied for some PPP money and got some. You could not use, when it first came out, you couldn't use the H-2A labor in your calculations.
Right.
And so I went. So I went and didn't use any H-2A labor. So that cut down. So it was a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see where there were some banks and some other lending institutions that were reading it different during the second batch of PPP money, and they were letting the growers use H-2A labor. I was too early to get all that. Otherwise, I'd probably got a pretty good chunk, you know. And right away, my local congressman Fred Upton's office called to see what we were going to do. Senator Peter's office called. Senator Stabenow's office called. What are you farmers going to do? And I said, the way it looks to me, I should just sit it out and not do anything. And they all said, oh, you can't do that. You guys got to grow something, or the American public will panic. And so right away I said, okay, if you want us to grow, you got to make sure that there's a program or something in place that if I get all this out in the field and I can't harvest it because there's no markets, or something happens where I have no labor because the COVID-19 has ramped up in Mexico and they closed the border, that I can be made whole. I can pay my bills. I don't need to make money, but I want to be able to pay my bills so I can do it again. And they all said, oh, we're going to make sure something happens and that you guys will be made whole and there'll be enough money in all the programs. And from what I'm seeing of program, that's the newest program, the CFAP or Farm Aid, Corona's Farm Aid program, it doesn't look like that's the answer either.
Fred, is there anything else you wish people understood better right now about the food supply chain?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things. Number one, look for local grown, U.S. grown produce. Okay, we need to make agriculture stronger and bigger again in the U.S. because I hate to be at the disadvantage of not growing enough here and then having something happen in Mexico or you have a different administration in Mexico and they don't want to sell to the U.S. because of something we did or something we do or something we won't agree to do. That's no way to have food security in this country, and that's a matter of national interest.
Fred Leitz of Leitz Farms in Sotus Township. Fred, thank you so much for your time today, and we wish you luck with the rest of the growing season.
Thank you, April. Call anytime.
Farmers have tried for decades to get some predictability in their workforce. It's been an uphill battle. Many of the emergency immigration bans happening right now do not affect migrant workers, but there are tons of other issues in the mix, not the least of which is COVID. Teresa Hendricks is director and senior litigator with Migrant Legal Aid, and she joins us now. Teresa, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Can you tell us, first of all, how often are you getting calls from workers who have health and safety concerns?
Oh my gosh, I am at this point, before the season has really even gotten started, I'm mentally drained, I'm overwhelmed, and I'm exhausted. We have so many phone calls, and the people that are calling are scared out of their minds, like I've never seen in 24 years that I've been doing this.
Wow.
It's something new and difficult to deal with because of the onslaught of the amount of people calling.
What kinds of things are they concerned about? Just like conditions that frighten them or active outbreaks?
Active outbreaks, worried about people not enforcing safety measures at their facility. There's a widely differing approach to safety for the workers depending on what company they're working for. And now we're even finding that depending on if it's a large company, it can vary between supervisor or line boss in how much enforcement there is of the safety measures. But the immigrants that usually harvest our food usually live in family situations with multi-generations. So they're worried about anybody bringing home the illness to the children or to the in-laws or elderly people living in their household. And they just don't know where to turn to. And they're too afraid to lose their job to not report, even when there's an outbreak or a lack of safety protocol.
Can you tell us a little bit about where the notable outbreaks have happened? I know about one at the Herbrooks Poultry Ranch, but what else is on your radar?
We've gotten phone calls from egg-producing facilities from not only Herbrooks, but the Hudsonville location of Sunrise Acres, and the meatpacking plant, JBS, we know has had over 100 people infected, and there's many other places where people have called and said, we don't want to say even where we're working, but this is what's happening, and can you give me an idea of what I can do about it or where I can go for a test?
Is there anything that you can tell them to help them?
Yes, I try to tell them that they have the right, you know, I go through their rights and responsibilities during this pandemic, and I offer them usually some options about what they'd like us to do, anything from making a communication with their employer and not naming them to calling the health department. And then we have some other options, like I can trigger my Fair Food program, or I can send them masks. We have people sending us $5 per farm worker, and I can send a whole safety kit to them, which includes masks and gloves and antibacterial gel. And then I can give them some Spanish language material that can help them understand things. But mostly they want to know what is the most that they can do to protect their family and how much at risk does that put them of losing their job. So they're doing this constant balancing of their basic needs.
Some employers like Fred Leitz are doing the right things, but as you say, there are some taking a much less stringent approach to safety. Are there any mandated protections for farm workers and food supply workers? If an employer isn't providing PPE, if an employer isn't providing sanitary housing conditions?
Well, that's the $1,000 question. There are CDC guidelines, depending on what kind of facility you run, whether it's a meat packing plant or a food processing plant or in the fields. But enforcement is spotty. I mean, I don't know how we have enough to enforce everybody's work environment. And so you'll find spotty enforcement, if any. And we're just all trying to work together between health departments and food and safety professionals to try to do what we can to keep the workplace safe. These workers are at extremely high risk because of the nature of their work.
When you say the nature of their work, can you give us an overview of some of the conditions that we might be talking about for Michigan's migrant workers?
Sure. It'll depend on crop. So let's take asparagus. You sit on a tractor and shoulder to shoulder, basically, for, you know, from dawn till dusk, harvesting asparagus right next to your coworkers. When we move to the blueberries, you're going to be using the same weigh station, and you're going to be dumping and weighing your blueberries, sometimes standing in line. And then oftentimes when they're picking apples, they're picking in pairs, and so they're constantly working with someone else. And then their living conditions, oftentimes they're bunk beds. They're certainly not 6 feet apart. Sometimes they have to share common facilities like kitchens and refrigerators and bathrooms and laundry facilities.
So what's the situation for workers who do get sick? Do they necessarily have options for a clinic or healthcare?
Well, if the employer is following the rules, then they would give them time off, paid, and they would allow them to get the test. And now any farm worker can get a test. They don't have to be symptomatic. And so they need to know where they can go to get the test, that they will be covered for their time off from work while they're waiting for the test results. But once they test negative or when they're cleared of the virus, there's really not a lot of protections if they don't go back to work to protecting their job. And so they're being told, you know, we probably might hire you back, but it's no guarantee.
Teresa, what kind of damage could we be looking at if farms aren't working to ensure more protective regulations for their workers?
I think we could be in a catastrophic situation where we're looking at half the amount of produce that we usually come up with. Not only because the social distancing is going to cut down on the amount of product that can be put out in the same time frame, but also even farms that are complying and have controlled the outbreak, they're still going to have difficulty getting the same production out. So I think we are risking about half the production. And we have, I think the market value of our crops in Michigan that are hand harvested is $11 billion, according to the state's numbers.
We've already seen, you know, some outbreaks that got national attention among pork producers or chicken ranches. Do you feel like any lessons have been learned? I mean, did that serve as sort of a wake-up call within regulatory circles about this?
I don't see that so much in Michigan. I don't see a lot of enforcement going on. I don't see any true consequences for people not following the rules or any results of any investigations. It might be because it's too early and it hasn't made it my way yet. But one thing I do know is that certain facilities that are dealing with animals have decided to proactively euthanize about half of their flock.
But that sounds more like a cut your losses kind of move.
Yeah, I think that's the idea is to they don't have enough workers to be able to process as much as they used to.
Right. How are you directing your advocacy to try to think through ways that might help the situation?
We normally are able to go out and do outreach directly at the camps, but we have to modify that. So I've been going on Spanish radio stations pretty regularly and for about an hour taking phone calls from people who are nervous or scared and don't want to give their name or maybe are asking on behalf of their whole company. And usually after I finish one of those, our phones ring off the hook with people that want follow-up information and want to go over their specific situation. We're also delivering the safety kits that we've come up with, which are the gloves and the masks and safety literature, which has all of our information on it and some resources. And so we're leaving those in the areas where normally we would have direct contact with workers. We're leaving them for them. And then people will call and request that we send them some safety kits as well. So, and we haven't even really begun the season, so I can't imagine where this is headed. I just hope that from this pandemic, one good thing would come out of it, and that would be that there's an increased respect for the risk that the farm workers put themselves at for their health and safety just to earn a living and provide us our food. And this pandemic is just on top of all of the other health hazards that they face. We have a pesticide safety program, but it doesn't prevent exposures that result in horrific complications for children and for families and medical bills. And so we're constantly trying to defend against regular health issues. And now this is just added exponentially to their burden and our responsibility to protect them.
Teresa Hendricks is director and senior litigator with Migrant Legal Aid. Teresa, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.